All right, let's do this. How are you, what the fuckers? What the fuck buddies? What the fucking ears? What the fuck stickers? What the fuck stickers? Have I said that before? Anyway, welcome to the show. I am Mark Maron. This is WTF. Thank you for listening. What a year it's been, huh? I've got no list of things to share with you. I've got no best ofs. I've got no breakdowns. I don't really believe in lists that much, except when I'm on them towards the top. Then all of a sudden, I'm very excited about any list. But other than that, I'm not really a list guy. My guest today, Renaissance man, Adam Goldberg. You may know him as a musician, as a photographer. Perhaps best you know him as an actor from Saving Private Ryan or Dazed and Confused. But to me, he's just another nutty, half-Jewish guy. We had a good time talking. You'll enjoy it. Okay, good. What have I been doing? I've been, hold on a minute. I'm going to go get a book. Drew Friedman. He's going to be on the show soon. Drew Friedman. I do not know if you know Drew Friedman, but he's a genius illustrator, a genius comic artist. I think the first time I saw his work was, hold on, what was that called? It was Any Similarities to Persons Living or Dead is Purely Coincidental, which he wrote with his brother Josh Allen Friedman. Their dad is Bruce J. Friedman, the amazingly brilliant dark short story writer from the 70s. Warts and All, he also wrote with his brother. Private Lives of Public Figures. Old Jewish Comedians, 1, 2, and 3. But this one is new. If you're a comic fan, Heroes of the Comics, Portraits of the Legends of Comic Books. This is a nice Christmas gift. This is Drew Friedman, great comic artist. And he wrote all these little pieces on like people like Max Gaines, Harry Chesler, Sheldon Mayer, Craig Vlessel, Jerry Iger, Will Eisner, Al Jaffe, Stan Lee. All these people that I know very little about, but you comic heads. It's a beautiful, Mort Drucker, Mad Magazine, folks. Am I right? It's a beautiful book. So if you want to pick that up, Drew Friedman's Heroes of the Comics. It's got a foreword by Al Jaffe. Al Jaffe, who changed my life through Mad Magazine. Did Mad Magazine change your life? Changed my fucking life. Anyways, love Drew Friedman. I did talk to him. That interview is forthcoming. Everything's all right. I'm trying to not cry. I'm trying to accept myself and others. I'm trying to put love out into the world. Oh, my God. It's screener time. I'm a member of several unions, and some of those unions have awards. I get these screeners because I'm a voting member of this or that. I watched Still Alice with Julianne Moore about the woman who gets early onset Alzheimer's. She's the fucking best actor in the world. Oh my God, I've always thought this. I want to talk to her so bad. I want to talk to her so bad. Do you know that like years ago, I guest hosted 4 episodes of Later when they were looking for a replacement for Greg Kinnear. And I just always so badly wanted to interview Julianne Moore. I was terrible at interviewing, but the people I ended up interviewing, who did I end up in? Was it, what's that comedian's name? Jessica, oh shit. Lisa Ann Walter, Robert Loggia, David O. Russell, Roger Ebert. Those were the 4 I ended up interviewing. But I never got to talk to Julianne Moore. Anyways, Still Alice is a profoundly moving little movie that I was watching with Sarah, the gal I'm dating. And it was one of those movies, like, I think Americans have sort of they really need their movies to end well. They really need their, because I've heard that some people are like, I'm not sure about that movie. There's no reason not to think that's a great movie, other than the fact is it's about a woman with early onset Alzheimer's. And there's no way it can end well in some respects. See, that's the twist of that movie, because I'm midway through that movie and I'm saying, like, do we even need to watch this? But I want to watch Julianne Moore, but like, this is brutal. You know, Alec Baldwin's in it and there's a great supporting cast, but where it goes at the end and what it takes you through as she deteriorates with this disease is profoundly human. And the way this thing ends is so perfectly poetic that it's celebration of humanity through this trying, tragic story. It flipped my mind. After that movie, after I watched her, like, her performance is spectacular. But the way that button at the end, the way it ended, I was sort of like, you know what? You know, life is what it is. And And it doesn't end well for anybody. Maybe if you're lucky, you go quick. But it's a very human thing, dying. There's nothing you can do to stop it. But it is part of it. It's part of the journey. But see it. Julianne Moore is amazing. I went and saw Inherent Vice, Paul Thomas Anderson's film. Loved it. Don't know what anyone's problem with this is. It's based on a Thomas Pynchon book. I believe Thomas Pynchon had a hand in the creating and writing of it. Paul Thomas Anderson is a genius. Even when he's inconsistent, he's still a genius. But man, this movie was a journey, a sort of lyrical, poetic, half hallucinated jaunt through the transition from the 60s to the 70s with all the layers of crazy Pynchon-esque bullshit, all the paranoid, weird connections that he invented it. I guess it's a private eye movie. I don't think it fucking matters what kind of movie it is. It's just layered and funny and bizarre and loaded with the real guts of what the United States was like at that moment. And I have a hard time understanding it. And I think hopefully I'll get to talk to Paul Thomas Anderson. I think that might happen. That's all I'm going to say. That's all I'm going to give you. And like any of his movies, I'm going to have to see it another four times. Did I mention Adam Goldberg was on the show? What do we got to do now? Let's talk to Adam Goldberg. Should we?
What do you use over there?
You got just
in here? Right here?
So what?
What?
What do you record into?
Into the computer.
I thought this was going to be a reel-to-reel thing, because I really assumed.
You thought I was really full-on analog.
Yeah, this is disappointing.
I'm sorry.
No, I was like, no, is it Pro Tools or what?
No, it's GarageBand.
All right.
That would have been hilarious. So I was like, check, the reel-to-reel's going.
Yeah.
Where'd you go? Germany?
Palm Springs. Oh, you mean like a couple years
what
ago?
What was the performance thing?
Oh, right. Okay, so I briefly had a record label. Called P.S. Played Again, Sam.
You have a lot of big ideas, Adam.
I do have a lot of big ideas. Yeah, execution. So
This is the Goldberg Sisters.
That was the record that
Played Again, Sam. Played Again, Sam.
Exactly.
Records. This is your record label.
That's not my label. That's the label that picked up that record and made me go to Europe.
And this is the most recent one, Stranger's Morning. Morning.
That's the one I would say I'm arguably most proud of, just because that was the one. I don't necessarily. It's to me the most cohesive and personal, and I played everything on it. So by that alone, and all the songs were written in the same general time frame. Whereas the other things were almost more gathering material over a period of years and playing with different musicians. But the last one was all sort of me in the course of a year.
So the Germans here, which one?
Why do you keep thinking it was Germans?
I don't know. Didn't you go tour in
Europe?
You just say
did
someone,
I go to Germany? Yeah, but I don't.
I thought you said somebody bought you gear or you needed to.
I did. It's just funny that you think it's Germany. I think I just said Europe.
I think it's a saving
Private
Ryan thing.
It is true that I am fixated with Germany, but I mean, you couldn't have known that.
Maybe I could have.
No, you could have.
How long have you been fixated with Germany?
I don't know that I'm fixated by it, but I did go to Berlin and I did feel haunted by it.
Really?
I did, yeah.
And why? Because...
Well, I went there. I took a very... Well, there's two reasons why. I mean, first of all, I went there to visit the ex-girlfriend who thought prog rock was music made in Prague.
Was from Berlin?
No. But she was working on a motion picture there.
Yeah, a movie.
Right. And so...
What?
I thought if I thinly veiled what it was by calling it a motion picture...
How about a film?
She was working on a film? It was hardly a film.
Really?
Not to disparage... The
upcoming filmmakers?
Yeah.
By calling your ex-girlfriend's movie in Berlin?
Yeah.
Barely a film?
No, it was a... Doesn't matter. The point is...
I don't know if it doesn't matter.
It does matter. But I was going because the last time I didn't visit her on a film set, she broke up with me from the film set. And in this case, she broke up with me anyway when she got back on the way back from the airport.
But you made the effort.
I did make the effort, and I have a horrible fear of flying. Horrendous. I'm a horrendous flyer.
For how long?
I even had to bring a buddy.
I'm not going to take notes.
For how long? Since around 13 or 14, around the time I became
anxious.
But
how do you function? I mean,
horribly. I function horribly.
You're anxious like now?
Not as bad as if we were doing this on a plane. but not great.
I suggested that to my assistant. I don't know how Adam feels about this. It's weird, but I feel
like we take a commuter.
If he's going to bring all this gear, we should rent a plane.
We should get go to San
charter
Francisco.
One. Yeah, exactly. Charter a plane exactly. For Adam to record on. I think that's probably the next record.
It is the
it's
next
about
step.
Your fear of flying.
Yeah.
And your attempt to overcome it
sure.
by recording in the
sure.
air.
Sure. It's that Erica Jong book. What is it?
Fear of flying.
And it'll be my musical interpretation of it.
But the anxiety thing, that's ongoing?
Since only about the age of 13.
Oh, before
only,
that, everything
only about,
was great?
Everything was pretty good. I don't think it was. But I don't think I was aware of the fact
that
Right,
you don't remember.
Yeah, I start looking back. I was like, oh, there were signs. I had headaches every day when I was 9 years old. But, I had no self-awareness. So
right, no, of course. All right, so wait, let's work backwards. So
I went to
You went
Berlin.
To Berlin. The reason why you were haunted by it, you'd been there before with this, to chase down this girl and try to make that work after you blew it before.
Well,
and she was working on a film that is not really to be spoken of.
Well, I mean, no, we shouldn't speak of the film, but we should know. We
never
should
speak
not,
of it.
Never speak of it. But no, so I went for that, and actually thought the place was really fascinating, you know.
Yeah.
But I took a very dark bent, I think, you know, and I took basically the sort of took a very historical, it was a very historical vacation, historically bent vacation. In other words, I was like, where's the nearest concentration camp?
So, you said that to somebody? Look, I don't care which one, where did Jews die?
Basically, I looked in the Fromers, and I was like, where's the closest concentration camp? Because we're not going to go for 5 hours.
We're not going to go to Poland.
Right.
We're
exactly.
in Germany,
right,
they have them here.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Which actually, I
don't know how many there are.
Well,
there.
There's one that's right outside of
was
Berlin,
like Belsen,
which was an early one. No.
No.
I can't remember the name.
Oh, an early one.
A very
so
early
they,
one.
We're honing there.
It was the early.
You don't remember the name.
I don't know. I want to make it. I don't remember the name.
You just needed to go someplace where Jews died.
I did.
A
on,
lot
on
of
mass,
Jews.
Yeah.
Right.
And it was upsetting.
Yeah.
It was also.
Imagine if you went to Auschwitz. I mean, this was a smart
I
one.
I wanted to go to Auschwitz. We wanted to. We couldn't fit it in.
Right.
I became then obsessed about, I wanted to see them all. I don't wanted to go to the big one, you know.
How many are there? Like 12?
I don't know. I'm not an expert. Although Netflix thinks I am because every fucking time I log on, they suggest, and literally now they suggest human lampshade. That's the, I'm not kidding you.
Is that a movie?
There's some fucking documentary about the.
Whether it really is a reality
yes,
or not?
Yes, exactly.
And is it?
I wouldn't watch it. Actually started to. I turned it off. It was about 3 a.m.
Because that's one of those myths that we heard when we were in Hebrew school.
That's
I don't
right.
know how Jewish you are.
Well, that's what
are.
They're trying to do. I went to Jewish day school.
Yeah.
First of all, my mother wasn't Jewish.
Right.
But I went to Jewish day school.
Well, you know what that means, right?
Yeah, but my penis is Jewish.
Okay.
And
but your dad is very Jewish.
My dad isn't, although over the years, he's become, I feel like, increasingly Jewish. Like, this was a man who does not know how to operate his email, yet somehow manages to forward me almost on a weekly basis some
Israel
kind of
stuff.
Zionist
yeah.
propaganda.
Yeah, my dad's like that, too. I got one today.
But
did you
only,
get one today about the shield?
No. But I mean, this.
I don't know if they're in the same loop or not.
But I started finally sending rebuttals back because it was getting to be a barrage. And I have a good relationship with my dad, you know. But he was never. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I thought he was Jew-ish, like me, Jewish, you know?
Well, what triggers it? Like, if they don't get triggered by some need to connect with a spiritual thing, they become very loyal to Israel.
Is that what it is?
Yeah. I don't know why.
But it's all,
well,
yeah,
I mean, I do know why, because
it's happy, and it's like, I don't get invited to, ironically, right, because I'm mm-hmm. considered, you know, quite Jewish, or I'm considered, you know what I mean? People
you
who know me.
You did that to yourself.
Well, I think there, I have another point of view on that, but I mean, I think it was done to me a little bit. I mean, like sort of in vitro, but the point is,
yeah.
is that I never get invited to Seder's. I always want to.
I don't either.
Never.
My mother's Jewish and
right.
I don't get invited.
Nobody invites me, but my dad is very happy this, happy that, happy blah, blah, blah. And
mm-hmm.
this shit, I swear to you, did not. I didn't get a bar mitzvah. They didn't give a fuck.
Right. But now, like, he wants to feel connected.
He found Israel. I would say he didn't find God. He
right.
found Israel.
That's right. I think that happens. He's probably Republican now.
He started to move further to the center, but then he moved back after. It took the entire first Bush Jr. term.
The second one or the first one?
Second Bush.
Yeah.
But it took his entire term
for him to
move back to the center left.
Right.
Because he was going right over. He was in Iraq with Bush,
right,
basically.
Well, 9/11 fucked a lot of people's heads up.
I guess so. And
yeah.
He just kept moving further and further and further to the right, and it was just to the point where you couldn't even have a conversation with him.
So you didn't,
and now it's this, you know, Obama was just like, I mean, you can't, oh, you know, it was, no, I mean, it was like the second coming for him. I mean, yeah. It was so confused. Politically, I love the man. Anyway,
So you grew up here?
I grew up in Los Angeles, yeah.
The whole time?
Yeah, I moved.
You got brothers and sisters?
Well, my father and my stepmother, when I was in my 20s, had two daughters.
So you have 20-year-old half-siblings?
Basically, yeah, teenager and a but teenagers.
That's
yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's kind of...
And your mom is where?
She's in Topanga Canyon. She's a therapist, a psychotherapist.
What kind of therapist?
A psychotherapist, a therapist for psychos.
Okay.
A psychologist.
A psychologist.
A psychologist. She
not
has a PhD.
Psychiatrist.
Not a psychiatrist. Not
so
a
she has people come over, she has a practice, and she's got regular customers,
right.
And
yeah.
She lives in a nice house, and the office is in the house.
She does have a home, but the home office thing is very recent.
Oh, really?
Yeah, she mainly had she has an office in Santa Monica and in her place.
She's always been a therapist.
Not really. No, no.
That's new.
She was a showgirl. She wasn't.
No,
but she was a when she met my dad. I think she was. No, my mother's gonna fucking kill me.
She won't hear it.
No. She'll hear everything. She's probably hearing this now. Somehow, not live.
The mother that you've implanted in your brain is hearing it,
and
she's doing a very good job.
No, but like we went out of town over the weekend.
Yeah.
You
and your mom?
My girlfriend and I and this couple mm-hmm. That we know well. And I
mentioned, you travel with couples?
Not usually.
How'd that go for you?
But we wanted to try the swinging thing because it's like we're a few years into the... No, it's they're a nice couple. They she my girlfriend's business partner.
No, do you know how to do that?
Swinging?
No, not swinging. Anyone can do that, kind of. But I mean, do you know how to sort of like, oh, we're going to spend a weekend with another couple?
Yeah, I have to tell you, I was, well, as I am about most things, I was a little anxious, but it turned out fine.
Yeah.
It turned out lovely, actually. It was nice.
You guys
and we had sort of done it before with a different couple at the same house in Palm Springs.
You had a nice grown-up time? So,
well, I pretended to be a grown-up and they were actual grown-ups.
Right.
Like, I cooked once, but I fucking went into a full panic, and I tried to conceal it.
What kind of panic? Like, oh, I don't have this.
I can't. I didn't have enough sauce. I was fucking... I had made too much pasta for the amount of sauce. They wanted to help out in the kitchen at the same time, and I didn't want to say, no, don't.
Yeah.
But really, it makes me fucking insane.
When there's someone there, like, do you need
now this? Now they're going to hear this.
What are you talking about? You don't think your girlfriend knows this about you?
She knows this, but
the other couple?
Clark and Lauren don't. But look, they know I'm crazy.
Now we know.
They know I'm crazy.
I don't know if you're crazy. Are you crazy? You're just like a little neurotic and anxious.
Oh, I don't think I'm crazy, no.
No.
No. I mean, I don't think I'm... No, I don't hear voices.
Right.
Except when I'm sleeping, which I when I actually do.
Do you hear voices?
I have hypnagogic hallucinations.
Hypnagogic?
Yeah. Hypnagogic.
You had to look that up?
No, I didn't. Well, I had to look it up because, yeah, I had to look up, you know, what it was that was. In fact, I learned about
it. What does that mean?
It's like, you know when people say they've been abducted and they describe that sensation?
Mm-hmm.
That's all they're describing.
So that's what happens to you when you sleep?
Yeah, but I don't go around saying I've been abducted.
Were you?
No, my point is I'm working backwards here. I think that
I don't know if we're working in any timeline. Like backwards would be impressive, but
I think that people when they say
we're trying to land somewhere is what's happening.
I think when they say they've been abducted,
right?
Back to Palm Springs. So my mother texts me, "How's the eggplant parmesan?" My point being, is that I at one point I told my mother that Lauren, one of the members of the couple,
yeah.
A female member of the couple,
right. We were, Clark and Warren,
made an amazing eggplant parmesan.
Okay.
And how that was interesting because I don't like eggplant.
Right,
or eggplant
but you
parmesan,
enjoyed.
But I love hers.
Wow. What do you think it was? Is it because sometimes the eggplant, if it's not cooked all the way through,
she makes it real flat and fried or something like that.
But it's soft, right? Though, I mean,
I can't remember. I had it once and it's just.
What was your experience that turned you on it?
The point was, I remember enjoying it. I obviously mentioned this to my mother. And as soon as we land in Palm Springs, I get this text from my mom. How's the eggplant parmesan? You know, something along
right.
those lines. So
right.
when I said to you, oh, she's going to hear this. Oh, no, she's not going to hear this.
Right.
I said, she's hearing it now.
Right.
That's what I meant.
She knew you had it.
Hypnagogic hallucination. So that's like an alpha state. You're half asleep,
right?
And you hear things,
mm-hmm.
and you're aware that you're asleep,
mm-hmm.
and you can't do anything about it. And some people who've described,
I think that's called date rape.
Yeah, basically. What's happened is I've been roofied a series of times by various family members,
and you watch,
and I'm
them,
having some PTSD,
and they're forcing you to listen to
yeah,
them.
That's yeah. right. That's yes. exactly right. That's right. Like, what is that moaning? That sort of fucking sound? Because I don't remember dreaming that. So, people who have lucid dreams,
yeah,
or
I've been having them lately.
And you can control
right.
your dream. So it's very similar, but you're not really visualizing anything.
Right.
And you're hearing things. And I've done things. People have had out-of-body experiences.
Right.
So I told a friend about this many, many years
ago. One of those.
Okay. So
you?
All the time.
You have them all the time? Are you here now?
I'm here right now, but okay. when I'm sleeping.
Yeah.
And it depends. If you're overtired is usually when it is.
Right.
So years ago, I told a friend of mine about these states I had. And I was... Mm-hmm. hearing this drilling sound, and I
right.
felt like I was being sort of bored into the bed, like I was going somehow driven into the bed beneath me, and it was horrifying. I was terrified, and it was the year I went to college. I say the year because I dropped out the following year,
right?
So I sort of thought I was maybe having like a nervous breakdown or something. So he said, that's amazing. I've been trying to induce that experience. Here's this book. I've been reading it, and he'd been trying to induce these out-of-body experiences.
What was the book?
I don't remember. But it was some book about how you can induce out-of-body experiences.
So that didn't interest you?
Well, to me, it reassured me.
Right.
Because
possible that you have a gift.
That I had a gift, that I was touched. That I was touched.
I don't even need to read this book.
Right.
I'm doing it now.
Well, that's what he said. He's like, basically, you're touched.
Yeah.
So later that week, maybe, I began to have this experience again. And I was being drilled into the bed and felt paralyzed.
What do you mean, drilled into the bed? Was there?
I don't know how to explain it. It sounds like
is it like a pressure?
Yes.
But you know,
I'm face down.
Oh, you're face down.
Face down.
Oh my God!
And like you're sinking, like you're falling, like you're falling, like you're falling. Like
right,
you're falling.
You're being compressed into something.
Yeah,
not falling.
Well, but there also is a sensation of falling.
Right. But let's track it.
Mm-hmm.
So you grew up an only child.
That's correct.
With at least a Jewish-looking father, and
yeah,
a mother who
my mother's very olive.
Olive, yeah. But you're in. Where'd you grow up? What part?
Well, I grew up
Santa Monica.
No, my dad lived on the West Side, but my parents split up when I was five, and.
That's early.
That explains it.
That explains something.
Your parents got divorced?
No, yeah, they did, and it was devastating. I was 35.
Were you really 35?
Yeah.
Were you devastated?
No.
Not at all?
Not really. Yeah. It was hard to figure out who to live with, but it was my choice.
Oh, my God. So,
What are you going to do now? You're taking pictures?
Yeah, I've my interest is waning, and now
your interest is
no.
Waning.
I'm kidding. It's obviously because things are getting too deep.
What do you mean
too intense? And I'm hiding behind my camera.
Ask you where you grew up, and we're in the weeds.
No, we're good. So I grew up in the middle of town, like the Wilshire district.
That's the weirdest place to grow up. This is like ill-defined.
It is very ill-defined. I never knew
in one of those apartment buildings?
No, I lived in a house, which I cannot fucking stop dreaming about. I had a very recent dream about it.
Are you being drilled into the house?
I'm not being drilled into the house, but I do have surreal... I mean, it's a dream. Of course, it's fucking surreal.
I had a dream the other night that involved my ex-girlfriend,
mm-hmm.
who we were planning on having a child,
right.
But it ended badly. And I was in a house, and I don't know who else was there with me, but there was a sliding door out onto a patio, and my friend Jim Schubert, who I haven't seen in years,
mm-hmm.
well, no, he's been in here, but I see him around, but he was outside, and he was throwing a fit about something. He was mm-hmm. like losing his fucking mind. He's mm-hmm. a comedian. And I opened the sliding door to find out why he's freaking out. And then it turns out he's mad at me. And then I turn around and there's some, the people who were there trying to slide a large box.
Mm-hmm. A lot of sliding.
Yeah, sliding a box through the glass door. And I was worried my cats were going to get out.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went back into the house and then I'm in my grandmother's living room. And the stairs that go upstairs, the woman who I used to date is coming down the stairs, mm-hmm. very pregnant. And she walks in with this other mishigas going on behind me. And I look at her and I go, I had nothing to do with that. And she's like, that's a real nice thing to say.
Mm.
And that was the dream.
Huh.
What the fuck is that?
Well, do you want to talk about it?
It's not time for that.
How ex of a girlfriend?
About a year.
Uh-huh. You haven't seen her in a year?
No, but I hear...
Do you still feel a little haunted?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I do. Yeah. Yeah, but that, what has that got to do with Jim Schubert and whatever the
large box? Well, there's a lot, maybe a lot of day residue in there as well. Did you
day residue? That's true.
Yeah,
that's
did
what
you,
it was.
Did you talk to him? Get a message from him?
No, but at the comedy club I was working at, he was coming the following week, I saw his picture every night.
Right. So okay. That's
why
what
it's called day residue.
Yeah, that's why he was there. Mm-hmm. And what he represents, of course, is
me.
You know, yeah, probably.
I'm on the outside screaming.
Yeah.
And I just can't get. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, keep what? Talking. My work is almost done here.
Keep talking. Yeah. And I can't get that box into the house.
You can't
and
get the
I
box
and
in
I'm
the
worried
house.
I can't I'm not
you're
making,
having tr- you're having
I'm not making changes because I'm afraid to
Well, you don't want to take responsibility for something also.
Is that true?
It
does,
like it.
Yeah. She's not pregnant.
Right. No, I know. Well, I'm not,
yeah, maybe that's true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you instigate the breakup?
Yes. Hmm. Yeah.
Do you feel guilty about it?
I feel it saddens me, but I didn't see a choice.
Okay.
Yeah. So I don't know if it's guilty, mm-hmm. but it's sad to make choices that that maybe part of you is not emotionally wants to do, but it has to do.
Did she live with you?
Yeah.
She lived here?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Okay, so you grow up in Wilshire.
I grew up here. I went to school at a private school called Oakwood in North Hollywood, where a lot of like famous people.
But not
kids
the
went.
Weird one in Santa Monica.
Not Crossroads,
not
but,
Crossroads.
It's, but it's similar. There okay. was three. I didn't actually get into Crossroads. I'm still bitter about it. I was waitlisted.
Have you tried recently?
I guarantee you I would not get in now. what little I retain from Oakwood.
So what is Oakwood? Do we mean famous people? Like
movie? Oh, it was just like, it was.
Celebrity people?
Yeah, it was just one of the, it's like there's sort of three, well, there are several, fucking LA,
yeah.
for one thing. So it was
but
a private,
what's your old man do? Like, were you in show business?
No, he had a wholesale food business until really recently called Goldberg and Salvi Foods.
Really?
Yeah. And his father was in the food business.
Exporting type of stuff? Or?
Sold food to restaurants and institutions,
airplanes.
And
a distributor.
Yeah, a distributor. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Did you go? Were you part of that? Did you drive a truck?
No, as a kid, I used to answer phones there. I thought it was really exciting.
At the warehouse.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Down in Vernon.
Yeah.
Where you remember in Cary, where they go and get the pig's blood.
Yeah.
That's right near where we worked.
Really? Mm-hmm. It's an interesting point of reference.
So every time I see Cary, which isn't often, but when I see it, I smell it.
Oh,
because it stinks down there in Vernon.
Is there
it smells like
there's a lot of butchering going
on?
Yeah,
it smells like pig.
So your parents split up when you're five and you're going to this fancy school. Are you upset?
I didn't go to that school till many years later. I went to that's when I went to the Jewish school after they split up. And I used to sort of like, I like to exaggerate the divorce because I think I wanted it to be more. I like to talk about it a lot. I remember a girl I was trying to impress in the second grade asked me about my dad, and I mm-hmm. said, "Well, you know, it's like Star Wars because mm-hmm. I guess seen Star Wars,
right?"
You know? And she was like, "Oh, you mean he's dead?" Because I was alluding to Luke Skywalker having it, and I was like, "No, but I only see him on weekends," you know. And I was like, because I thought that was kind of cool.
Yeah.
I thought I took the whole thing in stride, and I think it was only really in my mid-30s that I started to realize that it really fucked me up.
When you start to ask questions about why you are the way you are and track them back?
Because here's what happened.
Yeah.
As I went to therapy so early on that it almost became...
How old?
Very early on.
Are you afraid to say?
No, I'm not. I the first time I went to therapy, I was 9 because I was getting headaches every day.
Okay.
I was very briefly.
Right.
Then when I was 13, I began to have horrible, horrible anxiety episodes.
Like
I couldn't go in. It started in a math class and I thought I was going to vomit in the math class.
Over a problem?
No.
Oh.
It was completely out of left field. Like I thought I just had the flu.
Right.
But it became evident that I was having some kind of,
not connected to anything.
It seemed irrespective of, I mean, I didn't like math. I was bad at it.
Right.
I mean, so maybe that's why it happened when it happened.
Right.
But I mean, no. Then it would be elevators. I couldn't go to plays. I mean, the funny part is.
Plays.
I couldn't see plays, but I was in plays, like, as a kid.
A lot of people have that anxiety. How long is it? Is it not that kind?
No, I mean, like, I was afraid I was going to, like, be stuck in a theater in an elevator.
Right.
I mean, it was acute for a few months. It was really acute for a few months. Like, I couldn't go now.
How were you able to track that? What did you figure it out to be?
Well, I started to go to therapy, you know, and you start to talk about it, and just the talking about it, you know, makes it less sort of monstrous or whatever. But I guess my point was, is because I'd been dissecting this childhood of mine from so early on, it ceased to have the sort of, I think, as my analysis of it, ceased to have the kind of impact that it would have maybe if I had just started cold at 30. So in some weird way, I had taken, oh yeah, well, of course the divorce. Oh, and of course this maybe too close relationship with my mother, and maybe this awkward relationship with my father, and you know, whatever it is.
But when you're
And you start to say that, you identify it early.
Yeah.
You say it so much, it starts to lose its meaning, like a word, right? It starts to lose its
value. It's not connected to anything.
It stops feeling like anything. And at a certain point, I think maybe when I stopped going to therapy and then maybe started again or whatever it was, or maybe it was when, you know, one certain relationship fell apart and you're like, Jesus Christ, I'm 36 years old. You know, what the fuck is, this is not funny anymore.
Wait, I can't get my shit together.
Yeah, I really, yeah, there is something, there's really an issue.
I'm 50, so, you know, you're looking down the barrel at...
Listen, man, I'm 40, yeah, I'm going to be 44 this year. I mean,
but
it's all the same. We're all basically 80 at this point. I mean, no, do you know what I mean? Like, it doesn't...
No, we're right? not.
Well, a little bit, though. It's not a year goes by, 5 years go by.
You don't have kids.
Not exactly. That's a whole other story.
What does that mean?
Well, it depends how... It depends how dark you want this episode to go.
What do you mean? I can handle it.
I haven't said this. I haven't talked about this at all. So
who's we?
My girlfriend and I. We've been together for several years.
Okay.
So she was pregnant. People know this because in whatever social network land.
Yeah.
You know, so people say, oh, how's your baby? So we had a stillborn child about a year and a half ago. But, and I, you know, haven't, you know, talked about it or anything. I mean, of course I've talked about it, but not in any sort of public fashion.
It's horrible.
Yeah. Totally horrible. And also horrible because I had been ambivalent about having children.
Yeah.
What's weird that you had that dream, by the way.
Yeah. And I talked to you about it.
Well, it's weird that you said, yeah, yeah, that's strange. Anyway.
But so did you know, were you aware that that was going to happen?
No.
Oh, really?
No, I mean, it was like...
The day of thing?
It was 4 days after the due date. I mean, we were just...
That's devastating.
Yeah, no, it was horrifying. And it was also like my worst fear. So, you know, and I there's been a few, you know, in the past, I don't know, 6 or 7 years, life got as... disturbing and frightening as I had always kind of imagined it was.
You had prepared for.
Like a friend of mine died in 2005 in a really horrible way, who was a really, really, really close friend of mine. And, you know, up till then, it was a lot of existential masturbation. Do you know?
Right, sure.
I had a very good life.
Well, I think that
And I have a very good life, I should say. I mean, you know what I mean? I was very lucky. I had, you know, grandparents that live a long time and healthy parents, and yeah, so what, they got divorced, and so what, I, you know.
Yeah, I'm in the same, yeah, what, yeah.
You know, got vertigo spells.
But the weird thing about anxiety is that, like, anxiety turns away specifically to try to protect you from those realities. Like, you know, your brain's just working every angle out of fear.
Of course, yeah.
And then when real shit happens, there's no way to be prepared for that. And it brings you right into the present. There's nothing you could ever imagine.
No, one of the craziest sensations I remember having is when my friend had died. You know, I had found out while I was driving on the freeway, and I had to pull, you know, I had to pull over on the side of the road, and I had to call a friend of ours and, you know, start, I guess, sobbing. I'm not sure.
You can't even identify what was.
Well, I don't remember if it was like I don't remember if I was just so incredulous at that point. I was trying to sort of do some sort of recon.
Yeah.
Or if I was crying it. But I remember when I went to the funeral, there was the whole thing was just devastating. It was this woman. I feel like I should identify it as this woman, this 21-year-old girl, who I guess had gotten into a fight with her mother, and. Said wanted to kill herself. So she drove 100 miles an hour through the streets of Chicago and rammed her car into my friend's car to kill herself. And he and his two friends were on their fucking lunch break. You know, they all worked at Shure.
Yeah.
I'm looking at Shure, right? I'm looking at a microphone that says Shure. So they worked at Shure Microphones.
They did?
Yeah.
Huh.
And they were just on their fucking lunch break. And this woman... you know, just kills them. I mean, like, instantly.
Did she die?
No, of course not. And she got time served and she can go fuck herself.
Right.
And she, anyway, so So that was all confusing. What the hell had happened?
Right.
So, anyways, you go to this funeral, and they, you know, three people in a kind of, and they were all musicians, and in Chicago also. I mean, I think there's it branches out. It's far reaching.
Yeah.
I think the
community.
Yeah. The effects of something like that. Anyway, at this funeral, which was like packed or whatever, you know, there was only three of us that I guess spoke, three friends. And I remember getting up there, and I had this crazy, uncontrollable feeling. I don't know that I've had that feeling. Well, the only other time was when my son, you know, baby died, where I simply had absolutely no, I had lost complete sense of my faculties. I had no, there was no skill set. There was nothing I could rely on. And you couldn't simply go, you couldn't rely on let's say your anxiety. There was nothing between me and the pain of trying to speak to this crowd of people. And there was no, like sort of theatrical artifice I could rely on. Like that
you
was
were consumed with emotion.
Consumed with emotion. I mean, I'm not breaking ground here.
Right.
Yeah. Like, but yeah.
No, but it's a weird feeling.
Yeah,
that,
it is.
Like, because like I've cried in front of crowds.
Right.
And it's when you feel it coming, what do you
call it? You're drowning. It feels like drowning.
It does. But yeah. Like, but there's that moment though, where you realize that, all right, this is an appropriate place to do this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're all feeling grief. And
right.
It does, it's not
right.
Out of context.
Right.
I'm not, you know.
Right. No. Although I have to say, there was still this little self-aware part of me because I, you know, have always been this way and have been sort of obsessed with movies since I can remember, and always observing myself and always sort of imagining the cinematic version of whatever reality I was in at the time and blah, blah, blah. In other words, not fully being present, I guess you might say. There was still this small part of me that
you're
when
really
I...
You're really anxious.
You're writing this down on a sticky note. But there was a part of me that stepped back and thought, I hope this doesn't come off as disingenuous. In other words,
you were self-conscious about being.
Well, because
I said
at one point, I'm sorry, because I was trying to read this fucking thing I had written in the goddamn car ride, you know, and I just couldn't read it. And so I said, I'm sorry, I'm sorry. And all I could think of was the 85 movies I had seen where someone's like, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Just, I'm sorry. And I thought, oh, fuck, you know, these are his parents. You know what I mean? And like, I don't want
to. I kind of wish you would have said exactly what you're saying to me there.
Yeah. I don't know if
I don't want to seem disingenuous because
right.
I'm really feeling this.
Right.
But you have to understand that I'm a little self-conscious.
Right, right. Yeah. That would have gone well. That would have gone over well.
Did you get through it? What happened?
Yeah, I got through it, and it was, and I got a really lovely. This sounds fucking horrible. I got great feedback on it, Mark. Got really good feedback. I fucking. I killed.
Nailed it?
I nailed it. I fucking nailed it. Oh, boy.
So you've had this horrible couple of years.
Well, starting in 2005, there was... So that year was the same year that the girlfriend in question, the one who thought prog rock was music made in Prague, yeah. That was the first time that she split up with me. It was also the year that my film, the second film I had directed, had come out, but it was after 3 years of being in... And kind of a little,
where are these movies? We tried to get these.
Yeah,
movies.
I know. Well, that's what I was going to tell you. I mean, I love your work. You can kind of find Scotch and Milk was a film that I had made when I was 25 that I crammed to the gills with jazz, hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Couldn't
worth of
license
jazz.
It.
Basically, yeah. I think now I probably could because the licensing deals have become much more. Well, manageable and I think appropriate. But
what did you learn from this horrible event with your with the stillborn and, mm-hmm. and with you know the losing of the friend and I imagine you're telling me that this relationship was sort of the beginning of the dominoes falling, the breakup and what have you?
I think what I learned was is that I'm an incredibly resilient person. And not just that I am, that people are incredibly resilient.
They are. They're built to handle
They're just incredibly
stuff.
Fucking yeah. resilient. And that, so, you know, after this 1 year where this movie came out, and it came out for a week, and after I'd been fighting to push it out in the theaters for 2 years, first of all, that year began with my dog dying. My dog of 9 years, you know.
Yeah.
Then the breakup, a TV series I was on, it was canceled after two episodes.
Which one?
Called Head Cases.
Yeah.
The film came out for a week. The girlfriend dumped me the day after my 35th birthday on the telephone.
On the telephone.
Yeah, and I had to move out of the house because...
You were living together.
Yeah. Prior to that, I owned this fucking fantastic little house that I sold to Giovanni, who was on your show.
Yeah.
In Silver Lake for what was now would be an inconceivably small amount of money.
Right.
With a pool, but, oh, I'm in love.
Right.
And you're much richer than I am.
The girl was.
Yeah, so let's...
Yeah.
Make the most financially fucking self-destructive move.
Yeah, I'll give up my life and move in with you.
Fucking... So I rebuilt my little life and then got back together with her as soon as I had fully
when you went back to Berlin
constructed. No, I got a house and had this, my life. I was dating a girl and Roxanne, that's my girlfriend. So she's pregnant again. This is something else we're not telling. We weren't going to tell anybody until, I mean, it's obvious. You can see her. She's gigantic. But we weren't going to tell anybody unless you ran into her.
Right.
But I would be remiss in saying, oh, we had this horrible thing happening without saying.
Were you able to get through it and be supportive? But does your anxiety enable you to be there for other people? I mean,
this is the thing. Yeah. I'll give you two examples of how counterintuitively, in fact, it does. Yes.
In other words, you have to be aware.
There is a part of me.
Right.
And it was what I have learned and what I learned from that and what I learned when there was a guy that was in our house at 4 a.m. is standing over my sleeping girlfriend. This is something else that happened a couple of years ago.
Over Roxanne?
Yeah.
You woke up.
I was playing guitar upstairs. It was 4 a.m. She was asleep. And I just hear her screaming like a horror movie, like a fucking horror movie. So I run downstairs with my guitar.
As a weapon.
Yeah. My 1965 ES-330 Gibson over my head.
Yeah.
And there's this guy who looked, at the time it was just confusing. He was sort of this preppy, kind of handsome. He looked a little like Andrew Garfield from the Facebook movie.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess now he's Spider-Man, but at the time he was...
However you want to see him.
Well, that's how I saw him, because that movie had just come out.
Spider-Man, you would have been up against something.
That's true.
The Facebook movie you could handle.
I could handle that guy. Well, that's what I kept thinking, though, because I kept thinking, like... And she kept thinking that. Like, we must know this guy. Why is he standing in our house? Like, you're going through this thing where... So the only thing I could come up with is the guy from the Facebook movie.
Yeah.
Must be going to somebody's party.
Right.
And he must have walked in, even though it's impossible to get... I mean, the way he had got into my house is so circuitous and kind of treacherous because it's dark and you have to walk up this very steep hill and blah, blah, blah.
You still in Silver Lake?
No, because... No.
Right.
But close. Yeah. Los Feliz.
Yeah.
So anyway, whatever. To make a long story short, I scared the guy out of the house, but what came out of me was this incredible amount of, like, I mean, like, I was ready to fucking kill the guy.
Yeah.
He was bigger than me or whatever. But, I mean, and look, if the guy had a gun, the guy had truly been a threat, who fucking knows? Maybe I sized him up. No, I don't. To this day, I don't know what it was. He was a guy who kept saying, is this so-and-so's house?
Was he drunk?
This is what everybody says, was he on drugs? But, I mean, yeah, he had no kind of affect, so maybe.
Yeah.
But he didn't look like a... He looked like a... I mean, maybe he was like on ecstasy. You know what I mean? He looked like a preppy guy who would be on ecstasy.
Right.
Maybe he was on acid. I don't know. Weirdly, a week later, Moby, who I don't know, but I read this, had an intruder in his house.
You'd really have to climb a hill to get to that house.
In the morning.
Yeah.
Who apparently was on acid, and I guess Moby made him fucking breakfast. And the difference between me and Moby, and I'm sure there are a lot.
You're not as lonely.
I'm going to say anything. I'm just saying I'm sure there's a lot of differences. To answer your question, I can be there for people, yes.
Yeah.
And that's one of the only thing, I suppose, positive to come out of this experience with...
Which one?
with the pregnancy,
baby, yeah.
Is that...
Well, congratulations that you're expecting again.
Thank you, but we're not... I'm telling you to balance the story out,
right.
But I don't feel, unfortunately, we're both fucking
scared.
Freaked out.
Yeah.
It's just not fun.
Scary.
It's just not fucking fun. Yeah.
How long are you in? I don't know when this is going to go up. You might have a child by the time this airs.
Right, or not. Another. You know.
All right.
That's how it is.
Try to be optimistic.
I know, but it didn't work last time. Although, actually, I don't know that I was optimistic last time, which, of course, then I
did
started.
Did you get any answers about it?
Yeah, some very kind of oblique things. Like, we had these extensive sort of tests done,
yeah,
which showed some incredibly, if you Google it, you will find a paper which cites an incident of this, like some crazy chromosomal aberration, except that that's not, they're saying that we could have that. You and I sitting here could have it.
So they, you know, it was a mystery.
No, it's a mystery.
It's a sad
and,
mystery.
And most of them are, apparently.
But you seem okay now.
Well, I mean, what? I mean,
no,
yeah.
I mean, general.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it was a weird year because that happened, and then I went, and I went almost immediately, and I went, yeah, I'd made this record towards the end of the pregnancy. The pregnancy...
Stranger's Morning.
Right. So that took on kind of weird, eerie prescience in some weird way.
And people can get this record?
The record you can buy. The movies, you're fucked.
What are you going to do about that? When can we...
Well, no, I love your work. You can find it's on DVD somewhere.
All right.
And
is
then
on Netflix.
No, I don't. I think you have to brand it on Netflix. I don't think they stream it. I don't control these things. It was an ugly battle. I no longer had. It was a really ugly situation.
Are you gonna? Is something you want to do more of directing?
Yeah, that was what I had intended to do. Somehow I got sidetracked, and now I'm an actor.
Oh, really?
Basically, yeah.
But you've been acting since you were 20.
It was a way, right? But I made my first film. I made my first film. Well, yeah, when I was about 24, 25.
When was your first acting gig?
19.
What was it?
But I was making short film. You know, the idea was like I applied to NYU Film School. I just didn't get in. you know.
Yeah.
But I always argue it was because it was like the last year before they accepted films as part of the entrance.
Requirement. Yeah.
Isn't that bizarre?
Yeah.
Still
you're growing up, you're going to therapy, you're living with your mom, who's not a therapist yet. Your dad's selling meat to hotels and restaurants.
Right.
And you're here in Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
You get to be about a teenager, you start going to the fancy school.
Mm-hmm.
So when does your interest start in the movies? So you say to me you've always found a tremendous
release. Oh, like when I was a very little kid.
Like what was it? Like what were the ones on loop? Which were the movies that you were like, that's the greatest movie in the world. I got to see that again and again.
Well, I mean, it would sort of change. I mean, I think like when I was 6 and 7, it was sort of obvious sorts of things. Like, you know, Rocky.
Yeah.
But to me, it was like I left Rocky. I mean, you know, saw the movie in the theater, and I left, and I was shadow boxing.
Sure.
I was like, I want to be a boxer.
Yeah,
so I went and took boxing lessons. But then I also started putting on little scenes for my parents. So I remember combining.
Both your parents remarried?
My father remarried many, many years later, and my mother had boyfriends, and then remarried some years later. So my mother's first boyfriend after my parents got divorced was this guy, and. My father would come over to pick me up on weekends, and I would put on little. I'd sell him a ticket, you know, sort of make this, you know, kind of make this joke that I had to sell my poor father a ticket to fucking pick me up to see me. He already had to deal with like this fucking hulking ex-boyfriend or hulking new boyfriend of my mother's.
Yeah.
And we would perform. I saw some kids do Macbeth at the Jewish Community Center.
Yeah.
So I made my mother, and Werner was the guy's name. Things weren't bad enough.
Yeah.
perform a sword fight scene.
Yeah.
A sword fight.
Right.
Okay, nothing Freudian about that.
Right.
For my father, and I don't know what the fuck I did. I think I directed that one.
That's a good movie right there.
Yeah. And then
You weren't in the sword fight?
I don't remember if I participated in it. I'm sure
You staged the sword fight between Werner and your dad?
Werner and my mom, I think.
Had a sword fight.
I don't remember.
And you made your dad watch?
Basically, yeah. It sounds like a... You know, like...
I love that as a scene. And you're like 9? How old are you?
Oh, I'm like 6 or 7. 7 years old, maybe.
So you were trying to resolve some things.
Oh, yeah. But I was... But that was the thing. I immediately became like a performer. So then I did a scene. It was like doing acting class scenes before I knew what acting class was. You know, where you do like, you join an acting class and you do these moments,
right?
And it's like you're creating a kind of an improvised moment or you have a prop.
Yeah.
So I was doing that like when I was a very little kid. And so I did one that was based on One-on-One, the Robbie Benson movie.
Yeah.
And some sort of combination of One-on-One and Rocky.
Right.
So it was like maybe I had a basketball and then I made myself an egg.
Mm-hmm.
But instead of an egg, I used orange juice. And then I slugged it down.
Yeah.
And, you know, there you go. Give me a quarter, Dad.
Yeah.
And let's go to your house
right.
for the weekend. And then over time, as time went on, I joined acting classes. I was in plays, and then I became really interested in making films. I used to shoot all these Super 8 films, and then video when video cameras became available, and editing them just for my own sort of pleasure. And that's sort of what I figured I'd be doing. My interest wasn't, I guess, in directing other people's work, and I very rarely write. And so every seems like so. What I was getting.
Why don't you write?
I sort of have this thing where, I guess if I'm going to make a film, I guess I feel like it has to be a sort of an all or nothing deal. I've never been somebody who could. Well, arguably, I have some version. I don't know if it's ADD or whatever, but like, that's an all encompassing. I mean, you have to set aside.
You get anxiety about finishing.
Well, yeah, but the thing of it is that if I do something, I have to finish it. So in other words, I've written 4 scripts from beginning to end. 3 of them I made in the movies. The last one last year.
Which one's that?
This film that I'm driving from here to the sound mix of called No Way Jose.
Uh-huh.
So that's the first film since I Love Your Work that I wrote and directed. But yeah, I don't know. It's not.
And you're in it?
And I'm in it. This one I'm in. Yeah, I'm not.
What's it about?
It's a very thinly veiled version of what would have happened if Roxanne had kicked me to the curb and I had to go live with these married friends of mine. And they're friends of mine who some are actors, some are not, and they're all in it. And it's kind of, you know, a bit of the Cassavetes thing where uh-huh. it's my sort of group of people, but they're not necessarily anybody that you know, would have heard of, whereas I Love Your Work was sort of peppered with, was actually derided quite a bit for how cool the cast was, you
right,
know?
Right, right.
It was sort of a no-win situation. Could we get one, you know, the financier, could we get one more? How's Vince Vaughn? Yeah, but one more. Really? Vince Vaughn? Okay. And then in every review, it's all this derision about how many recognizable people are in the movie. Like, every fucking movie isn't like that. But
right.
anyway, so of course, this time it was like, can I get money for the movie? Well, do you have? No, and I'm not going to, because I'm not going to go down that road. And so this was a much smaller, even smaller than the last movie.
But you were able to, the budget.
We cobbled the financing together, and it's very small.
Like, and we made you it for, play some slightly heightened version of yourself?
Yeah, it's a kind of a, it's a version of me if I were a little more Mexican.
Mm-hmm.
In it, I'm 1/8 Mexican. In reality, I believe I'm something like 1/64 Mexican.
Okay, so.
It's a guy who's a kind of a washed up indie rocker. Who now plays children's birthday parties with his band called the Borges.
Mm-hmm.
His fiance, you know, and he's finally going to get married. He's finally going to, and he's about to turn 40, and he's going to commit. And all signs point to sort of him having maybe not a perfect life, but a life with someone who balances him. He's the crazy neurotic one. She's more stable, you know. But she discovers something about him.
Okay.
And she kicks him out of the house because it's sort of a deal breaker. And, you know, then he sort of decides that it was for the best. Well, yeah, I'm better off alone. I'm better off sleeping. You know, I'm a guy who's supposed to be on somebody's couch.
Right.
So it's sort of that struggle.
Well, that's good.
Yeah. I mean, it may not be good. I mean, you don't know.
Why do you feel about
it? It could be terrible.
What, did you cut it already?
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's nothing I can do about it now. It's like, it is what it is. Right now, I hate it. I think it's the worst thing, like, honestly, ever made. Not that I've made.
I'd be really selling it. I'm sure everyone's very excited.
It's just horrible.
Well, where did it start? How do you end up in, like, what was your first movie? Mr. Saturday Night?
Yeah, strictly speaking. I always say Dazed and Confused was because, you know, I was in it more. But yeah, technically, the first movie job I ever got was Mr. Saturday Night. I thought it was all going to change. I remember when I got that call. I was like, things are. Remember in The Jerk?
Yeah.
When he ends up in the phone book, yeah, things are going to start happening now.
How old were you when you did that?
Well, I guess I was about 20.
And he played
21.
I don't remember.
Know what I played either. It was cut down to. I don't even think I speak in it. I played Julie Warner's little brother.
But how'd you get involved?
I played Billy Crystal's nephew-in-law.
Oh, but how'd you make the jump? You got an agent? What happened?
Right. So I dropped out. So I went to school. I went to school in New York. I went to upstate New York. I went to Sarah Lawrence for a year. I dropped out. The girlfriend, the girl I lost my virginity to.
How did that go?
The virginity. Oh my God.
Quick.
So quick that I'm not sure I lost it that night. It may have been later on. I don't. Do you know what I mean?
Not quite.
I'm not sure. I don't know.
Oh.
I don't even know if I was in there or not. It was just. You know what I mean?
I do.
It was minus time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's exciting that first time.
I guess it is. I guess so. Yeah. I remember I had to trick myself into it. Was a whole thing.
What?
Oh God, I don't know. What? It's too honestly. I think it's too soon. I think I could tell that story. I got to be honest with you. I think I could tell you that
come
story
back in 5 years.
Not even five. That's one of those things I could tell you maybe in 20 years. It's just it's too embarrassing. It's actually too embarrassing.
Mine was pretty embarrassing.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was quick, and I was consumed with panic.
Yeah.
And it was with an older woman.
Yeah.
Not old, but right. She was a waitress at this place I worked at in high school.
That's always a coup. I dated a waitress once, and I thought it was the greatest thing. I couldn't believe I did it.
You did it.
Yeah.
And it was very quick, and I immediately assumed that she was disappointed.
Yeah.
And that stayed with me.
Right. To this day.
To this day.
Yeah,
I think they're disappointed.
I think it's safe to assume that they're disappointed.
They're all disappointed.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, wouldn't you, though, if you were being heaved over and upon by...
For seconds?
Right.
Like, oh,
yeah. So when she dumped me, I was like, I'm going to join an acting class and I'm going to...
Learn how to fuck.
I'm going to learn how to fuck. I know. I'm going to get a girlfriend. I'm going to get an agent. That's what happened.
Right.
I got a girlfriend and an agent.
But
it was a weird coincidence where this guy who was in my acting class, who interviewed the people to get into the acting class, to interview the prospective students, became an agent. It was a total fluke. And whatever success, and it's moderate.
You've done a lot
to
of work.
Mild, whatever it is, it's always been just a little.
But you're good. You're a recognizable thing, and like it's weird.
Yeah, I'm fine.
Okay. You don't have to get defensive, but I mean,
I'm. But get the job done.
But it's
get
funny.
It done.
You served a purpose. That there's only room for a couple nutty Jews.
You served a purpose. What is this, my eulogy? He served a purpose.
No, but you know what I mean? Is that you filled a... There's a place.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, here's the thing. I mean, I never saw... I never even... You know, like the Jewish thing, right? So I... As self-aware as I was, and as much as, like, for instance, growing up, I was a gigantic Woody Allen fan.
Right.
Like a huge Woody Allen fan.
Sure.
In fact...
Had to be.
It was those films that made me feel... In fact, I had a panic attack watching Hannah and Her Sisters...
While he's having a panic attack.
I had to leave the theater. Luckily, I lived three blocks away. I walked home and went and saw it again the next day. But... So he was always a source of real, actual, like, comfort for me.
Yeah, me too. Yeah.
But as an actor, I thought of myself as this very, and I still do, actually. I mean, and I feel like every once in a while, like, I'll do something like this Fargo TV show where people see, he's actually like a well-rounded actor.
Right.
And that's how I thought of myself. I thought of myself as like an angry young man guy. Yeah. I mean, I was like, that's the shit I was doing in plays.
Sure.
I was doing, or in acting class.
Yeah.
I wasn't. Yeah, maybe there was some funny stuff or some neurotic stuff, and definitely if I directed anything in those acting classes, it would always steer towards.
But it's weird, just as you're talking about this, because I was that way too, but in life and in comedy or whatever as a performer. But I don't think what we see.
No, it's not what they see.
No, like I was always angry too, but no one was ever convinced that I was anything but this Jewish guy.
Right, but
with
some
problems.
Right, but isn't that. I find that incredibly. I find that sad.
I don't know if it's sad. It's just like you're not gonna. I'm not going to be like.
Sure. Yeah.
You know, my anger, as menacing as it may be, is still not. I don't know. there's a the angry young man thing is it's outward.
Mm-hmm.
I think that like when your anger is more towards you or it's
right. Yeah, it's true. Yeah, I guess that's true. You're right. The one thing that's I missed the part about you're supposed to be angry at the world and just direct right. Yeah.
Something.
That's more like the angry young Jew.
Yeah.
Right.
I don't know.
Fuck this colon.
Yeah.
Well, God, this colon has betrayed me.
Well, just say, like...
And it's true. I did stand up 3 times in my life, right? When I was 19.
Oh, you tried it?
Oh, yeah. Thankfully.
Didn't stick?
No. Thankfully and for the good of the world, abandoned it. But, I mean, my whole shtick, it was just... And I would think it was more that I was doing a shtick about what I was trying to bottle the version of myself I think that you think or think that you're saying that people are going to perceive anyway. So it was hyper-bottled. So it was about my colonoscopy and it was about my...
Right.
It was about masturbating. And I was
right.
Like, but then I was like, you know, I don't have anything to add to the worlds
of those IBS comedy and
masturbation comedy, you know?
Do you have IBS?
Oh, horrible.
Really?
Horrible.
For real?
Oh, no, yeah. No, for real. Look, that's the thing is as much as I want to fight the stereotype... But my argument is that I inherited this shit from my mother, the non-Jewish one. This is where I get...
Yeah, but I don't believe necessarily in the stereotype. It's weird. I think we're informed how we're informed. And sadly, you know, if Woody Allen is one of your qualifiers, if I'm going to use like some sort of like recovery word, that if he's the guy that spoke to you, it's hard not to...
But to me, I had him, and then I also was obsessed with Brando and James Dean and David Lynch.
Yeah, me too.
But
you're never going to be that guy.
Well, no, of course not. But I think that...
It's interesting. Those are the guys. So Brando, David Lynch, Woody Allen.
I'm going off the top of my head.
No, but I like it. Yeah. Impulsively, because, you know, you brought a camera here. Mm-hmm. You're in your house, you know, making 12-hour loops. I mean, there is the artistic life.
Well, right. I guess that's the thing about sort of talking about acting. I think there are people that I always feel fraudulent to talking about it.
Because actors in general, when they're forced to talk, unless they're...
It's not that. I know what you mean. I think that I just feel like it was a passion of mine.
You can't help but be you. See, some actors... They're sort of empty vessels in a way.
Exactly.
And so, like, whatever you were going to do, it was going to be hard for you not to be typecast in a way.
Yeah, I think. But here was my thing is I always had something to say.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wanted to say it in whatever it was that I was acting in. I realized years later that was as an actor became less and less interesting to me. And then I would say, okay, if you have something to say, say it with music.
Right.
Say it with writing. Say it with art.
As an actor, just do what the director tells you.
Yeah, or find something or make a point of trying to find something where you get to act, you get to be somebody's instrument. But having said that, and there's something that's really exciting about when that happens. I mean, but that's not a full life for me.
No, I get it.
So
yeah.
I envy those people. Actually, I don't. I think it's actually, I think those, for those people who are more or less empty vessels who need to be filled up by other people's
maybe empty is like the wrong word I want to use, because there's a lot of actors that, you know, when you talk to them, they're relatively flat. But it does, I don't necessarily mean that they're dim. Obviously, they're emotionally loaded up, and, you know, if they're, you know, directed the right way or allowed to do the work,
I think the greatest actors are generally not always, listen to somebody like Peter O'Toole speak, he couldn't be more eloquent, but I mean a lot of actors aren't very articulate,
right?
Because they are in fact like a saxophone,
right?
And until somebody picks them up and plays them,
right,
but they're the world's greatest fucking saxophone,
right?
I will never be that,
right?
You know,
but also you want to do your own thing too.
Right, but it became less of a priority also. But ironically, the less of a priority it became, I also think I became a better actor. The things that I'm, let's say, known for, let's say something like Saving Private Ryan, I think is not a great performance. Like there,
why?
Because the performances got better the lower the stakes.
Uh-huh.
Some of my better performances you'll never see because they weren't in some high stakes situation like that.
But I mean, what was it like to do that? I mean, that movie was a pretty big break for you.
Yeah, it was, and then you sort of go back, and then things sort of go back to normal.
No, I know that, but yeah, I mean, still, the event itself, you traveled.
Sure. The flight was fucking horrible. The flight was horrible. I didn't know that we were going to make it there. It was a horrible flight.
But, and also, the you know, that scene, you know, as a Jew, and I think as anybody, you know, where you're killed by that Nazi, yeah, is so profound, is arguably the most disturbing scene in that movie. And the most compelling and the most weirdly erotic.
Mm.
It's fucked up.
Yeah.
It's a fucked up scene.
No, that, well, see, that, and that, and there is an example of something where I think, oh, that is good because it's visceral and it felt honest. And there was no, and yeah, there were lots of discussions about how we were going to do it. And yes, there were discussions about how it was going to be hyper real and how we were going to talk and how I really wanted this, you know, whatever it was. But once we were doing it, I always found that with physical, any kind of physical scene, you know, that you stop, it turns off the fucking voice in your head, or it turns off the director or the editor. That was something else. I had just made my first film. I was editing it for like a year when I went to do Saving Private Ryan. So I kept finding myself giving them shit because I knew that, you know, if you're lying in a gut, if you're lying in a scene, you know, there's a scene where Vin Diesel's killed, and that's a 12-hour day, right? So you're just sitting there as rain is pissing on you, and you have three lines, and you say them 15 different times in the camera, but you know that you have your close-up. And it was very, you know, it was kind of extemporaneously as he shot that in many ways because he didn't storyboard it and sort of, it was clear when this was your shot. And like, I remember very specifically giving him lots to work with in the editing room. But I also remember not being in the moment at all because I thought, I'll give them this look and then I'll give them that look. Then I'll give them this look and that look, and he'll have a lot to choose from when this guy, this buddy of mine's dying.
Right.
But that, and I'll still do that to this day. I think it's, sometimes it's a, it's a very practical way, and I think that probably people appreciate that.
But
because they're not getting one take, they're actually getting several takes.
But that's just being a professional on some level. If you're thinking about your close up and it's like a 15-second, 10-second thing.
It's true. That's true.
And that, you know, that's not an unreasonable way to think of it. But when that Nazi is on top of you.
Right. Well, that's the thing. No, that was great. I remember that. I remember walking away, I was like, this is the greatest day I've ever had. No, I mean, it really was the greatest day I ever had. Up until that point in my life, the only other greatest day was in Dazed and Confused when I got my ass kicked.
Yeah.
I mean, why? Why are these there? I mean, they're so cathartic.
They get you out of your head.
Oh, so out of your head. So out of your head.
Yeah.
It's so great.
Yeah.
And then you start crying and yeah, you didn't plan to do it. Because there was another day where Steven said at lunch, he walks by me, he goes, you know, when you find that that thing and you say that's going to be a Shabbat holocaust or whatever, you find that Hitler youth knife, he goes, cry. And he's walking by me at lunchtime. Just, and I'm like, fuck. So we barely shot anything by this point.
Yeah.
So Steven Spielberg just says, cry. And you think, and then what flashes through your mind is every weeping scene in every Steven Spielberg movie ever. And how good those tears were,
yeah,
you know, and how thick they were and how rich, you know? And I'm sitting there and I can't fucking, I mean, they're blowing fucking menthol into my eye. I mean, they're like, I'm thinking of everybody I know fucking dying. I mean, certainly the collective unconscious thing of the Jew is no longer, I mean, that's just meaningless to me at this point.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, I know how to fucking shake a lot.
Yeah.
I know how to shake like crazy.
Yeah.
And I remember his daughter, Jessica, was like, that was great. And I was like, okay. I have no idea whether it was great or not, but it's like his daughter thought it was cool. It's just like everybody was gathered by the monitor. Like it was like a family fucking affair.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's see if the Jew can cry.
Did you do it?
I mean, you know, it's in the movie. You make the call. You can see it. But then that day, that real, you know, that day with the German, that was heaven. Heaven on earth, Mark.
That was crazy.
Yeah, that was really nice.
It's a crazy, disturbing scene for anybody.
Yeah.
So, all right. You want to take another picture?
Oh, yeah, but just, you know, ignore me.
I'm talking to you.
Yeah, it's fine. All right, so.
Yeah, you're really getting away with this. You're really good at this. I have no idea what's happening.
All right.
So now, are you going to marry this girl that you're?
Oh, well, no, we're not. No, we don't need to be married. I mean, you know.
Okay.
I mean, you know, that's a whole other.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, I know. It's why I asked.
No, I mean,
it's possible we could get married. I mean, obviously, we've made some sort of, you know, decision to not because we're, you know, we've been together a long time.
Right.
You know, I have a problem. I mean, but it's not breaking ground here. So I have a problem with the institution of marriage.
Sure.
But, you know, it's a very strange thing to me. I mean, yeah, but you've been married.
Yeah, a couple times.
Right. Are you ever going to get married again?
I probably would. I'm very cynical about the whole relationship undertaking right now.
Just relationships in general.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, I seem to have botched it somewhat. You know, like I don't have any kids. I've been married twice, and now I'm fucking 50. And people are like, well, you can still have a kid. I'm like, oh, I don't know, man. Like, I would just like to, you know, relax.
Right. No, I, listen, I, yeah.
I mean,
no, I have had to fight the urge to be a, you know, a totally solitary person.
Yeah, I don't, I don't know if I'd be good at that because I don't mind living with people. I like seeing someone there, you know.
Well, that's the other thing. I mean, I love Roxanne very much. It seems totally bizarre. It would seem totally bizarre to not be with her. But I also think I happen to have found somebody who understands that, you know, who just understands that I have a very peculiar schedule, both emotionally and quite literally, you know, and that's not everybody could be with somebody like that, and nor could I be with somebody. I've been with people, I think, who are probably more similar in temperament, and that's just not attainable.
No, it's quite drama time.
Big time, yeah. Although I think that it also was a way for me to escape my own. I think one of the reasons I sort of woke up one day and was like, oh shit, I'm actually the one with the problem, and I've been hiding behind these other women's problems.
Yeah.
Because it's easy to say, like, well, I picked her up off the floor because she passed out drunk or whatever and brought her to bed, you know, three times last month. I must be the more functional one. I must be the healthier one,
right?
You know, I must be the lifesaver, whatever it is. And it was like, or she's screaming at me because, you know, for 2 hours in French because my dog shit in her yard. Well, she's a fucking psycho. I need to help this girl.
Deal with this.
Yeah. But really, it's like, no, that's just her. And you can choose to be there or not.
That's true.
And I was sort of not dealing with my own shit, my own, you know, craziness, because it was a lot easier to, you know, sort of play this role of the caretaker. That's the ironic thing you were saying. Like, can you be a caretaker? Yeah, in fact, probably to a fault.
Yeah, I get that too. Yeah. But it's like it is a way of distracting from your own problems. And then also, you know, you do it. It's not done out of some weird nurturing instinct. It's literally done to hold on to somebody.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so it's not like, you know, I do it because I care. It's I do it because I want to please this person.
Yeah.
And I'm insecure. And then when you think the problem with that is it's completely relative to the job you think you're doing. Like if they have a bad day, you're like, how I've done that. Oh, look what I've done for you.
Right.
And you're still going to act like this. It's just always going to lead to that fucking thing.
Well, the other thing is that if they actually got as healthy as you were, I think somewhat like kind of pretending that you wanted them to be.
Yeah.
They're out of there.
Yeah. I don't know, man. It's like, it's a fucking disaster.
I don't know. You can be in situations where you're with somebody who's so healthy that you don't even realize, like, can people be too healthy? I mean, this is something I think.
Well, you know, the point of reference to that for me, like, always, it's not a matter of healthy, but the most horrifying thing is it's the scene in the kitchen in Annie Hall with the lobsters, yeah, with the second woman.
Yeah,
it's a lobster.
Oh, it's horrifying. I mean, that's horrifying. That's a horror show. I mean, you've been in that situation.
That was the worst.
It's just awful. It's just awful.
Like,
I know. I don't understand. Is that a joke? I just watched that again the other day.
You did?
It's funny. I almost tweeted last night.
Yeah.
But I didn't, because then I was first of all, I literally couldn't get it in under 140, so I gave up. But also, I was like, it's happened that I've been eating next to somebody, and then they've tweeted about it. So, like, if I tweet this, but I was basically in the Marshall McLuhan scene last night, except it was with, like, right-wingy hipsters.
Mm.
It was a strange, that's why I couldn't formulate it into a tweet. It was too nuanced.
Right.
But I wanted to bring out Marshall McLuhan.
Right.
But I couldn't do it. And it was a guy not impressing a girl, but his Australian friend.
Right.
About American politics. Mm. And speaking in very black and white terms about their not being climate change, and about the exchange for what was the guy's name that we exchanged for the Guantanamo prisoners the POW.
Yeah, yeah.
But he said in very black and white terms, he was saying, so this guy left his base and joined Al-Qaeda. But he just said it in those terms. That was it. That was the end of the conversation. No nuance. And I'm sitting there like, well, it's, I don't know that that's, and it's just, and he didn't stop. He did not let, finally, we heard the Australian guy speak after about an hour and a fucking half.
Yeah. Meanwhile, your dinner, you're not having any conversation.
No, we're having no conversation.
You're with Roxanne?
Yeah, we're with Roxanne. We're just, and she'll say something, and I'll just,
I can't.
I just said, help me formulate this fucking tweet, because it's the only way we're going
to
get
the
out of here.
The world has to know.
I mean, yeah, right. The world, the 13,000 fucking point one people have to know. Yeah.
So you're not having any problem working?
No. You mean like employment-wise?
Yeah.
Not so bad. No, not pretty good. I mean, like, I did this Fargo thing, which was like more, you know,
people liked it.
They did like it. And yeah. And that was something, you know, that I was like, it's rare you do something and you like it and then other people like it. So that was nice. And then I did this pilot for Jim Gaffigan, which, you know, for CBS, you know, Jim?
Sure.
Yeah.
This is the second pilot.
Right. And then, so now we're doing it. After, you know, a lot of negotiating and sort of back and forth, TV Land sort of basically TV Land picked it up. And so now that's what I'm going to go do next year.
Gaffigan's show?
Huh.
TV Land?
Listen, I could have a whole, yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
It's a little bizarre, isn't it?
Yeah.
So the one that...
They're airing it on TV Land, and then I guess the same week they're going to air it on Comedy Central because, you know, everything's owned by...
Viacom. So, but you liked it was a good script?
Yeah, but I just had a really nice time.
He's a great guy. He's a very funny guy.
I just
like
them.
Nice, yeah.
It's a good...
And what do you play, his friend?
Yeah, I play some guy. I think that it was initially like based when they first wrote it on Dave Attell.
I was just going to say that.
Yeah, but now it's just me as his friend.
Right.
Basically. But yeah, New York stand-up comedian.
You're supposed to be a New York stand-up comedian?
Yeah, you think I can handle it?
Yeah, no. Yeah, sure. You can be Attell. You're more talkative than Attell. I mean...
Yeah. Well, anyway.
Well, that's good.
So yeah, so I do that next year, but...
How many are they going to do?
I think it's just 10. It's that's the thing that's kind of nice about it. It's like I just go and it's like 3 months in New York. And
right.
That's it.
And knock it out.
And that's that, yeah. I mean, and then, you know, if it goes, keeps going, then fine. But I like them a lot. I like Jim and Jeannie. So that's
nice. he's a funny guy.
Yeah, he's a good
in
guy.
Movies.
And then I made this, you know, my career's funny. It's like, you know, I just got something, you know, it's like the BBC just offered me something, but I'm not going to do it because it's a lot of flying and it's not enough money. But then if I audition for something, it's usually down between me and another guy, and usually the other guy gets it. I haven't gotten a role I've auditioned for in like 10 years.
Really?
Pretty much anything you've seen me in, it's been offered. And what you haven't seen me in, I've auditioned for it. So all those things, every time you see a movie and I'm not in it.
Are a lot of your friends actors?
No. Not anymore.
Uh-oh. Not anymore?
No.
Back when you were a kid, though, running around?
Basically, yeah.
Yeah.
Basically in my 20s.
It's interesting because there's a whole crew around your age that, like, everyone kind of grew up and just went their ways.
I mean, you know, there's all these guys. There's kind of, you know, when we did Dazed and Confused, I mean, that was definitely like a crew.
Yeah.
Sort of born.
Right.
Out of that a little bit. And, yeah, most of my friends are, I mean, you know, they're... either maybe they're musicians or maybe they're writers or,
right.
You know,
yeah.
some creative people for sure.
But you're doing good.
Yeah, I'm fine. I'm doing fine. I mean, the thing, you know, the thing is, you know, you make a film and it's a very consuming, you know, I wrote this film over a period of a few years. So I wrote it while I was doing a TV series in New York, and I wrote it while I, you know, once I got back, and then, you know, literally June or something of last year, I said, I'm going to make this movie. And it was just, and I'm going to make it this year, and period. And so, you know, we went into production, you know, got it together, and went into production in October. So since October, so the entire time I was doing Fargo, I was editing the movie in my hotel room. You know, I've been working on that pretty much nonstop. So now we're in the sound mix. So yeah, I mean, so that's the thing.
Are you doing all the music?
Well, I play a musician in it, so the songs that they play, I wrote, but then I'd had to do some incidental shit, so I had to pretend, like, in the background there's some mariachi shit stuff, so I posed as a mariachi musician. But to answer your question, no, there's a lot of source tracks in it. So it's a lot of, like, but it's not it's not scored conventionally. It's like if someone's playing a song on the radio, then we hear it.
Do you have a title for the movie?
No Way Jose.
Oh, did you already say that?
Maybe not.
Well, that's good, man. And the, and fear of flying really factors in for you as to whether or not you're going to take a gig.
Well, like this gig.
Why are you so afraid? What do you think is going to happen? It's going to crash?
Yeah, I think it's going to crash. I mean, I have it too, but I've had to deal.
I just live with it.
Well, I live with it too, but I mean, I no.
Once I'm up, I'm okay. It's only takeoff.
No, that's funny. As I'm not. I mean, I should be more terrified at takeoff and landing.
Landing, I'm great. I'm
I
like,
had
I
a flight so bad, Mark.
I've had
a few weeks ago that you cannot fucking believe it. No, you can't believe it was me on this flight. Oh. No, I mean this as it was landing.
Yeah.
Because they landed in a fucking windstorm that I heard was knocking over like telephone poles and things like that. They shouldn't have been flying in that weather.
Do you know they're built to fly?
Yeah, but let me tell you something. They delayed this flight for a couple of hours. And I look at the weather there. And I was like, oh, it's because there's terrible thunderstorms in New York. Yeah. And then all of a sudden, so now we're on the runway and he's like, it's going to be another 2 hours. And part of me is like, fuck. Another part of me is like, good.
Yeah.
Good they do this, right?
Yeah, safe.
Then all of a sudden, he gets kind of giddy, the pilot, and goes, hey, we got to, and he says something, I don't know what it means, it's a technical term, we got to blah, blah, blah. Yeah. But I guess I interpreted it to mean like a window.
Yeah.
So we're heading out. And I quickly check the weather in New York. No, it's still horrible, horrible thunderstorms. So about 20 minutes before we land, he comes on and he doesn't come on because he doesn't have the balls to. Uh-huh. He makes the flight attendant do it.
Yeah.
Stewardess. He makes a flight attendant come on and say, so we're going to prepare for landing a little early. The captain has informed us that there is going to be some very bad, now you never really hear it this way, very bad turbulence because of the weather. So now I'm just terrified. And I made some bizarre decision the prior weekend to watch every airport movie in succession. So Friday and Saturday night and the weekend before I left, I watched them all.
Why?
And look, it wasn't because one was on. And I was like, you know what? The first one, they're actually not, the early one, you know.
Pretty good.
Yeah, not bad. And it's a funny cast and the time period's funny. And you know, it's just, and then I was like, fucking what? I got to get through these. Like, I never really watched them. I was a huge Airplane fan, but which I'd seen 100 times. But it occurred to me, I wasn't getting half the jokes, I realize now.
Mm-hmm. Now you got to watch
that
again.
So I went all the way through the fucking Concorde one, which is one of the worst movies I've just ever seen.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking it's so absurd. There's no way this is going to have any actual effect on my psyche because it's too cartoonish.
No, how could it? You're already afraid of flying,
right? Exactly.
Why would seeing plane crash movies?
It's redundant. It's chicken with chicken sauce. Uh-huh, sure. But as it turns out, I think it did have an effect on me.
Of course it did.
Yeah, and because there's a lot of stuff that's weather related, you know.
So you were just maybe trying to knock out the fear by watching fictionalized versions of plane crashes.
Yeah, maybe, yeah, sort of like aversion therapy, right?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
So anyway, we start to land, and I'm telling you, I've never seen wings, and it's, I don't give a shit how far they can bend. I know that.
What were you doing to the person next to you?
Well, guess what?
What?
Slightly grazing his hand. And then I later find out that he's with the woman in front of him. For some reason, they didn't sit together, and she goes, was that not the worst? I'm not alone in this. I looked on Twitter. Okay?
Yeah.
So the woman in front of me said to him, was that not the worst flight you've ever been on? He's like, no, I've been through worse, but let me tell you something.
Yeah.
This guy's hand was like mine, was in his lap the whole time, and like mine was on the little console next to mine.
Gripping?
Not gripping, but a hand there,
yeah.
And a little grazing was going on between the two of us. Okay. Just like a little human touch.
Were you making sounds? Like, oh God.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Big ones. Because I thought, also, and that's when you know you're really scared.
No, I've done that,
Because I like to think I'm pretty fucking cool.
Yeah.
Because I wear my sunglasses and I got my fucking hoodie on, you know?
Yeah,
you and I'm all high on pills, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh God. And these sounds are coming out of you that you can't believe. And I go, Jesus Christ!
This is like a bit I used to do.
Really?
Yeah, because I had the same flight in Cleveland, flying into a Cleveland. like the line that I'm very proud of, it said, you don't decide your scream.
Who's that guy?
You don't know what's going to come.
That's right.
You know, you maybe have an idea because of you got scared by a spider or something.
But you don't really know what you sound like scared. Oh my God.
Well, but my joke is like, because like in the guy behind me was literally screaming. Like, oh God, God. It was that bad a flight.
Right.
And I say that I'm proud to report that what came out of me when I was terrified to the core of my being was, oh, come on.
Yes, I've done that.
Come on.
That's what I said.
Are you fucking kidding me?
Yes, I go, come on.
Yeah.
Because, no, but that's the thing. And it is interesting because you start to realize that there is this correlation between rage and anxiety. Because I get super mad. And when my girlfriend's there, unfortunately.
Dump it on her.
Well, I go, this is fucking ridiculous. And we're never fucking doing this again.
Yeah.
And I mean it. Or yeah. I think I mean it.
Yeah.
I go, and when I got off the plane, I texted her, never fucking again. Like it was her fault. Dog watching in Los Angeles, pregnant. That I almost died on this flight.
Right.
But I will tell you that as we landed, the plane dipped like this.
Yeah.
For those who are listening, that's about a 45 degree angle, I guess.
Yeah.
And then he just into the ground.
Yeah.
So as soon as it got it all flat. But I've never been that low to the ground where it's doing that.
Yeah, I know. It's disconcerting.
All right. Well, you say it like it's.
But no, yeah, I mean, I've had a couple bad flights.
I don't think he should have been flying. But it's not him. It's not his decision. It's air traffic control. So that's, I decided it's not that I don't trust the pilot. I don't trust air traffic control. That's who I don't trust because they want to get your ass on the ground.
Well, they
Let's face it.
Keep it going, sure.
They got to keep it going. It's a fucking business.
That's right. All right. Well, that doesn't sound like a comforting way to look at it. It doesn't sound like it's going to help.
No, it's not going to help. I was thinking about going to flight school, I guess.
You're going to fly yourself.
Or whatever, not actually, but in a simulator. I hear that helps.
A lot of people are chartering planes. It's expensive.
Oh, no, those go down. No, those are the ones that actually go down.
Oh, they are?
Oh, for sure.
Do you want to play music or no?
Well, sure. What would we do? I mean, I don't know what to...
What?
I don't know what I would play.
We brought all this shit over.
Yeah, you said to bring it. You were insistent upon it.
No,
you shamed me over a social network. I had to bring it.
Okay. All right. Well, doesn't
mean I won't plug it in.
We're going to
plug
it in.
We can make some sounds.
Sounded good though. I think that we can safely assume that people might meditate to that.
They could, yeah, except for
was a lot of clams on my part in there. Lots of clams.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
Clam
I think
Central.
I think that should be the title of the new record.
Clam Central.
Clam Central.
I think it's the name of my memoirs.
I think we did good, man.
Yeah. No.
You feel good about it?
Yeah, anything? I feel good. Congratulations.
On.
I don't know. I'm getting through it. I'm getting through it, man. Getting through it.
Well, I just wanted, I think, at the beginning of this to feel what those people in Europe felt.
You felt it. You don't know. Yeah.
Well, then we'll have to cover that next time.
Mm-hmm.
You good?
Yeah, I'm good.
Wow. Right? So we tried some stuff. We got out there a little bit. Adam Goldberg, what's happening? That's my show. Go to WTFpod.com. What's happening? Everything all right? Go to WTFpod.com for all your WTF Pod needs. Get on the mailing list. Get the app. Get the new the new updated app. And get the free app upgrade. Stream everything. Go to the merch thing at the site. Get shirts and stuff for your loved ones. For the holidays. And for God's sakes, have a happy holiday. I'm going to be back, though, before the holiday. I don't know why I'm saying that. Why am I acting like this is it? That's the fat talking. Man, I ran today. I ran up the hills. I ran 4 miles today and yesterday. Oh, my God. I don't think I need to play guitar. We did enough of that. Oh. Boomer lives!